Good morning. Today we're going to glean a little bit from the book of Ecclesiastes. So much can be said through this book that, you know, we talk a lot about things in this life and things that are of value and things that have purpose and things that have meaning. And we don't often think of them as being for naught. Or that we don't ever want to do things for naught. You know, we always want to think that we have a reason or a purpose in our life for doing something. And we see in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon, who wrote this particular book around 935 BC or so, that he was the only son of David, that he was the only son of David that was king in Jerusalem, that he indeed needed to be a wise guy. You know, he was looking for the way to justly lead his people and to do so in a righteous manner. He words himself as the preacher, this preacher, this son of David as well. So that as we're reading this, recognize that he's preaching to us. You know, that he's doing this not because he's the king or that he has some important message, but that he's preaching to us something that needs to be heard from God. You know, that this is not his ideas, but these are the things that he would wish to explain to us so that it might be holy. That these aren't man's thinkings, that this isn't the way of the world, but these are heavenly things. So the breakdown is kind of like this. In chapter 1, we have the introduction of the book, and it goes all the way through. The first 8 chapters or so discussing different things in life that bring pleasure, different things that bring wealth, different things that bring prominence, power, prestige, different things that might bring us pleasure. But then he describes through in the chapters 9 through 12 that only genuine happiness is not from wisdom, is not from those things that he talks about in the previous chapters there. But that is indeed through devotion to duty here in this life, in the right now, in the present, and preparation for the life to come after this life is over. There's something other than just the air we breathe in our lungs this very day, that there's something more to this life than just looking for happiness. And I think that as you read this book, you certainly understand that that's what he's talking about. He's saying that the search for happiness in any one of these things is vanity. You know, that it's all vanity. The vanities of vanity, says the preacher, that vanity is all vanity. Of course, the word occurs some 37 times in the book. And of all of that noise, all of those vanities, all of those things that are just of no value, of useless, that are absolutely useless, in chapter 12, he lets us understand what is useful. He says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. Colossians 3, chapter 1 reminds us of the same thing. If you then were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on the things of the earth. So he's reminding us that there is nothing here on this earth that has any value to us, that our life on this earth is not mission purpose, you know, that we indeed have something better, something bigger, something grander to reach out for. So just reading through briefly Ecclesiastes chapter 1, I think it's through 15. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanities of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes towards the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there ye return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who come after. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? Mark 8 reminds us that, for what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? So all of these different things that he's talking about that he's searching for all of this happiness through, he's looking for these different things. And he says that even if you gained all of those things, that you haven't profited anything if you've lost your soul. That the thing that God gives us as we are born is the only thing he cares about when we die. And that's our soul. And we have one job, is to make sure that it gets back to its creator. One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. And how true this is. You know, we often look at things from this worldly standpoint of longevity and things that last and things that come from generation to generation. And, you know, I think back to even the pyramids, and we have no idea. We have no idea who made them, how they were made, how they came about. We've got inklings, we've got ideas, but the information is lost. The data is gone. Nobody cares. I mean, everybody cares, but nobody could give you an inkling of how it was done, because it was all done in vanity. There's nothing that we can do, nothing that we can build that from generation to generation won't be lost throughout time. It's all vanity, right? However, he's telling us the one thing that is not vain, the one thing that we need to make sure that we're doing is that we're searching for God. The word forever here is used to describe like the Sabbath, the Passover, the burnt offerings. And as we know from Colossians chapter 2 and verse 14, that these things were all done away with when Jesus was nailed to the cross. So that word forever is not necessarily an indefinite amount of time. It's not going to end. There's definitely going to be an ending there. And he reminds us again that there, the only forever that Jesus has or that God talks about is with him by his side in the great hereafter. 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 10 says, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rose. The wind goes towards the south and turns around to the north, and the wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the seas are not full. To the place from where the rivers come, there they return again." And there's so much in the book of Ecclesiastes. We see the wisdom that's there and how he talks about the cycle of life even, and this idea that the rivers all return back from whence they came, and that everything has a cycle or a season. And he recognizes the wisdom in that, but that is indeed part of this earth. That all things are full of labor in verse 8, that man cannot express, that the eyes are not satisfied with seeing, nor the ears filled with hearing. He continues to say that which has been is what will be, that which is done has already been done, that there's nothing new under the sun. That all of these things that he's talking about, they've all been put in place from long ago. There's nothing new that I can think of that's going to surprise anybody. Maybe immediately we all have these short little bursts of aha moments, but the reality is it's been seen and done before, long before. He reminds us that the preacher was king over Israel and Jerusalem. "I set my heart to seek and search out wisdom by concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised." By which they may be exercised. So he's given all of this information to us that we are to glean and learn. And it's all for the purpose of us exercising it. You know, picking out the good from the bad. "I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity, and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered." So in verse 13, he says that he sets his heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. First Kings chapter 3 and verse 11, we see this, and we know that Solomon was indeed a man of God, that he wanted to have counsel with our Creator. And 1 Kings reminds us of that, chapter 3 and verse 11. "Then God said to him, because you have asked this thing and not asked for long life for yourself, nor have asked for riches for yourself, nor have asked for the life of your enemies, but have asked yourself for understanding to discern justice, Behold, I have done according to your word. See, I've given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any arise after you. He was truly seeking, and God provided for him. He says that I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity. All is grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. Solomon identifies at least 18 different things that he considers to be vain. And won't go through all of them. We'll just kind of scroll through. But all of the works of men, the pleasures of this world. You know, I found it interesting. He spends almost two chapters entirely on just pleasure and how vain seeking pleasure in our lives is. Pretty remarkable. The profits from one's labor, the requests for wisdom, all of these things he's saying are in and of themselves. If we are looking for happiness in any of these one things, and that's all we're doing, then it's a life of vanity. The focus of earthly accomplishments, an overemphasis on life and living, competition. You know, Solomon was a great man, and the first couple of chapters describe how much he was a great man. All that he was able to accomplish, all that he was able to build, all that he was able to do. He was known for being wealthy and being luxurious and being grand. And he recognizes that all of these things were all considered vain. Trying to please everyone, 10, the foolish use of words and promises. Money. Having the wealth but failing to use it properly, these are all vanity. Being able to use words masterfully, painful. Associating with those who do not think soberly about life. Man's attitude towards evil. The system of justice and retribution. And then desire to retrieve the past. And then 18, death itself. He considers it vain. I command with my heart, saying, look, I've attained greatness. He's saying, look at me. Look at what all I've done. I've communed within my heart. He's talked to himself, saying, look, I've attained greatness. I've gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also grasping for the wind, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So that in all of these things, as we're going through this life, if we truly are seeking in the ways of God, and finding through his scripture the ways to live that, through that, we're going to have a lot of sorrow in our life. We're going to have a lot of joy. And then we were talking about some of this in our class this morning with the kids. And just knowing that God has indeed made us special. He didn't create junk. He didn't make anything that he didn't plan or purpose. And that each of our purpose is not necessarily the things on this earth, but the things that come after this, and the search for that wisdom should be eternal. Acts 17, verse 30, truly these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. And we all recognize that man is Jesus the Christ. And he did indeed come to this earth and lived a life for each and every one of us, a life that was meant to be gleaned from, speculated, to be learnt, and to be put on that pedestal, to be shown from a mountaintop so that we all might see him, so we all might have that same hope of eternity, that great reward that he talks about, that my life here is not spent vainly doing things other than seeking the Lord. I can attempt to climb the highest mountains. I can go out and rule the world. I can be as great as President Trump ever could be. But if I don't have Jesus, if I don't have the message of the cross, if I haven't searched for him endlessly for all of my life, then I'm doing things vainly. If I'm seeking for happiness in anything other than Jesus Christ, then I'm doing it vainly. And that word vainly, you know, we talked about that in our class this morning as well, that to do something without value, you know, we consider that spinning our wheels or wasting time. And he's giving us that same warning through the message of Ecclesiastes, that if we're doing anything other than searching for God our Creator, then we're spinning wheels, we're wasting our time. And so that's my message to you this morning. It's short, to the point, and but important nonetheless, because each and every one of us have a soul. Each and every one of us were given a gift from God to protect that soul, to do something with it. And we can spend the rest of our life spinning our wheels, doing things vainly, looking for happiness that we will never find. You know, 2 Timothy 3:16 says that we have the entire Bible. Not some of it, not a portion of it, but all of it. That it was all written for the benefit of us. That the man of God, so the person of God, can be complete, made whole, not wanting anything. That we would be well prepared. And we have that obligation to ourselves to do that and to make it happen. We always offer at the end of the service an opportunity. If it's on your heart and you've been thinking about salvation, if you've been thinking about the cross and about Jesus and the message that he gave before he died, if you've been thinking about your soul as being troubled or lost or hidden from God, fear not, man. You can come forward now as we get ready to stand and sing. If you have any thing you wish to be made known, if you wish to become a Christian, a child of God, maybe you are a child. Maybe you've left some things go. You've dropped your guard. Maybe some of these things that you haven't considered vain maybe are now considered vain. Life goes on, man. Life will continue to go on. I'm going to live for today and make choices today that might be the best, but tomorrow might come and my choices might not be as smart as they were yesterday. So everybody falls, everybody stumbles. There's no perfect man on this earth anymore. He's dead and gone. We hung him on a cross. We murdered him. We murdered our Savior. But at this time, if there's anything that you have a need for, we offer this time to come forward and make your wishes known. We'll pray for you and with you.
Number 480.